I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and never let you forget who I am, 'cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. 'Cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. Welcome to Word of Mom Radio. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Word of Mom Radio and today's Mompreneur Model Show. I'm Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here with fabulous shows week after week, just breaking those myths that mompreneurs, you know, dabble in business in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We are smart businesswomen finding that balance between building a business and raising a family. And when I say balance, I don't mean equality, because it's not an equal proposition. But it's finding the ways and navigating the waters, and most importantly, remembering you are not alone, that there are other women out here and men out here that are struggling and doing it and making their businesses and creating things from home, or sometimes working out of the home and bringing things in. It doesn't matter. However we have to do it, we do it. And I'm excited today to be sharing another one of the remarkable women I have met on my social media journey, Sharon Silver. And I just want you to imagine, you know, take a healthy dose of mom, mix it in with a parent educator, and sprinkle it with, you know, a seeker spirit, and you have Sharon Silver. She has lived what every parent is living, a real life parenting real children. She knows the challenges that daily life brings family and shares tips, methods, and concepts that help parents correct behavior in a calm yet firm way to produce listening, accountability, respect, responsibility, and resolution. So I am really excited about sharing her because she's really helping parents' children, not just correcting behavior. So let's imagine transforming reactive parenting into confident and calm yet firm, responsive ways to teach children about behavior. Sharon and her proactive parenting tips delivers ways to correct misbehavior that inspire a child to think about his or her behavior, which creates respectful and responsible children who are ready for the world outside your front door. So with that being said, Sharon, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. That's quite the mouthful there.
Hey, you know, I love your site. You know, I grabbed stuff off your website, and, you know, for me, my kids are grown and gone, but I want to believe I was a very proactive parent in the sense
of... Well, I've read your stuff, and I think that that's probably true.
I hope so. You know, one of the best things I ever learned, and I was in school. I didn't go back to college until I was having my own kids, and Dr. Sands. That it is a parent's job to set boundaries, and it's a child's job to negotiate boundaries. And ultimately, it is not a democracy. It is a dictatorship. You are the king. And if they don't like it, they can move out. It doesn't matter that they're seven.
And I, as my mother used to say, and darling, I will call the taxi.
There you go. Let me pack you a sandwich. You know?
There you go.
So, you know, Sharon, I would love for you to kind of share your aha moment with us on this journey, which led you to creating proactive parenting.
Oh, you know, my aha moment came, I was a really young mom. I was 20 years old when I got married and was pregnant with my first child. I was a baby. but I also, you know, I had an intuitive sense about parenting because I sort of was, you know, always playing with my sister and like a second mom for my sister when I was a little girl. But when my son was about 3 and a half, you know, 3 and a half year olds, people say 2 year olds are difficult. I'm sorry, I beg to differ. 3 to 3 and a half is the true challenge, believe me. Developmentally, that is the age of belligerence. So imagine a rainy day trapped in the house with a baby and a 3 and a half year old. And this day, my son just happened to be on power struggle alert. Everything we did was just, we were butting heads. So I decided it was really time for me to reset the mood. I reached out to give him a hug, and he pulled away from me. He was afraid of me. he was afraid I was going to yell at him or spank him because I was so young. I was doing what my parents did and gave him a swat on the tuchus, as they used to say. I never really spanked, but, you know, I was horrified. I looked in his eyes and I realized that I had turned my beautiful child's love of me into fear of me, and I never spanked again. But that created an enormous problem. I had no idea how to correct behavior. So, you know, I was in college at the time. I talked to my professor. I was going to be a therapist. I started taking early childhood and parenting classes. And I started finding out that there really was a thread that really could have unleashed the kind of parent I wanted to be. And so I began reading everything I could get my hands on, taking every training known to man. And 29 years later, I'm a parent educator. I've raised my two kids, knock on wood. They're successful. They don't hate me. And, you know, that was my aha moment.
You know, I think many parents have had that moment, you know, because you learn by what you see, you know, and nothing against our parents, you know. I mean, I was really fortunate. My mom, I was born in 1960, my brother in 55, and, you know, 61 and 62, my other brothers. My mother nursed all of us, which in those days, they literally told her she was going to starve us.
If she did
this. You know, but she felt that, well, that's what my mother did, and that's what her mother did, and that's what my body's designed to do, so how can it be bad? But again, you know, so, I mean, that was the good side of it. We do, and so it's, I think it's very hard, and especially with a 3-year-old, because I'm right there with you. You know, they say the terrible twos, and I tell people all the time, it's followed by the incredibly horrible threes and the, oh, my God, I'm going to go bald fours, you know.
Yes, you know, I mean, I call the fours are just like, my son nailed it. He called it Superman, not Superman, Superman. Oh. You know, the fours are all about power. So then, you know, I mean, each stage has this wonderful gem that a parent gets to deal with, I like to say.
Well, you know, I have to ask you, and it's so funny because, again, my kids are grown and gone, but my first son was a born lawyer. And at 2.5 years old, could articulate any argument of anything that you said to him. No, it didn't matter. From the tiniest thing to climbing Mount Everest, this kid could rebuff any argument that you had, any way you said no, he could give you 17 different ways as to why you should say yes.
Yes, and that was my second child.
Let's face it, there are kids out there that are going to argue every point they have. Anytime you say no, it is going to become that huge, you know, whether it's a discussion, argument, tantrum, whatever. Well, how do you deal with that?
Okay, you know, that's a really excellent point. And I think that really cues into what proactive parenting is all about, which is, let's look at the reality of who your child is. And let's look at the reality of your job. When you do that, instead of looking at, you know, opposing forces coming together to duel it out to the death, then you have a much better opportunity to say, okay, look, for whatever reason, your spirit, who you are, your chemical makeup is somebody who needs to negotiate, argue, and needs to hear it in those terms. I cannot change that. Now, we think as parents, I can change that. No, you can't. But you can work with it. And you can still have, you know, your authority and the bottom line. And you can say, all right, love, if you have a case to present, present it to me. Go in your room, take a breath, and present your case. However, just because I allow you to present your case does not mean that I'm going to say yes 100% of the time, but I am going to honor the fact that this is a true need you have to present your case. So, you know, I think that, you know, my younger son was that person. he grew up to be a philosophy major, and now he works in IT for a major corporation here in the Bay Area, which is all tech, you know, he's very tech savvy. Did it help him? You know, it gave him the opportunity to feel good about himself, and he's quite articulate and strong in that area. I couldn't have changed it if I tried. Believe me, I tried.
Amazing, isn't it? I mean, because he's the same one, you know, when he hit his teen years, it was like, when does my opinion count in this family? I was like, when you pay rent. I was like, you know, you're along for the ride. I said, understand, I respect what you have to say. I do listen to what you are talking about, but I am the adult. So it is my responsibility to make the decisions, you know. And I remember saying to him one time, I said, I know right now you're so frustrated with me, and you think I should let you do exactly what you want to do, and you're so angry that I'm saying no. And he was like, you're right. I said, but you know what? What I just shared with you right now makes no sense, but someday, 10 years from now, all of a sudden you're going to go, something's going to happen. My words are going to come back, and you're going to be like, oh, that's what Mom meant. And the interesting thing is, he's 26. That happened about a year ago. He called me up. He goes, Mom, he said, you know, remember that time that you said to me about it'll come to me and I'll be like, oh, that's what you meant? He was like, it happened. I was like, you're kidding. I was so excited.
Well, I tell you, you know, my sister-in-law cued me into this years and years and years ago. I've been married a really long time. And she said, you know, when they're 20, they'll come back to you. I'm like, yeah. And I got to say, the 20s are when parents get their payback. The 20s are when the child is fully responsible for themselves, and you will get that phone call. Okay, I was really bad, Mom. I'm sorry. You were right. I'm like, oh, wait, I'm getting a tape recorder. Wait, where's your father? I want to hear this. Can we write this down? I want it notarized.
I have news for you. I actually have it in cards and postcards when my daughter moved to California. And now I'm getting the postcards like, Mom, I could never be this if it wasn't for you. You know, aww. I can't believe the things that I did and everything else. And you always hung in there. You know, because let's face it, it is that emotional roller coaster that you ride as a parent, you know, because you need to teach them the rules without breaking their spirit. And I mean, what do you do? How do you get your children to listen without yelling? You know, how do you shift that energy?
Well, you know, that's really what my focus. I mean, originally when I first started becoming a parent educator, I was dealing with every aspect of parenting. And then parenting became on the internet, you know, this thing that everybody was, you know, giving their advice, whether they were an educator, a therapist, whatever. And I realized that my niche was really about reacting, and that's where I've really fallen into that. And I wanted parents to know there is a way to do this, and that you don't have to get lit up like a Christmas tree and start reacting as soon as there's some kind of challenge. And there's two things that I want parents to know. Number one, I want parents to know that 3 seconds is your lifeline. And 3 seconds is a lot longer than you would realize. In fact, I just wrote a post 2 days ago. It's on my website at proactiveparenting.net that really articulates this. But think about it. If I say 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, that is 3 seconds. So what do I want you to do in those 3 seconds? I want you to ask yourself one question. If I yell, if I react, or if I lash out and punish, is it going to help the situation or is it going to inflame the situation? And once you look at that, you immediately realize my reaction is not going to help the situation. So then you have the next step, and that is, what do I do? Remain silent, because silence is an enormous tool that parents do not avail themselves of. We tend to listen in order just to wait for that moment when we can reply. We're not listening for understanding. We're not listening for how to teach the situation. So if you're silent, your child goes, uh-oh, I'm in really big trouble. She's really firm. She's not saying anything. I'm the only one who's hanging myself out here. So, you know, I used to tell my children, and I please apologize for, I'm going to apologize, I'm using a swear word here, but it is what I told my children. I said, sweetie, if I open my mouth, then there's two assholes in the room. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut and just let there be one. Wonder who that might be.
Oh my God, I want to write that down.
You know, and that was when they were 17 and 18 years old, and they were 6'4". And I'm a 5'4" woman. I'm, you know, in their eyes, I'm a big, powerful 12-foot woman, but, you know, that's not the point. And so they would come in full teenage, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm going to argue with you. And then when I wouldn't say anything, they would be like, uh-oh. And they had known for a very long time that that was what was behind my silence, is I'm not going to contribute to this moment. I'm sorry. And it doesn't take very long. And that's how you stop a reaction.
I love that. Well, you know, my daughter, and I've shared the story, you know, when my daughter, with those teenage years, it was just like, where did my sweet little girl go when the hormone fairy hit? And my son, I was talking to my son about it one time, and I was like, it's insane. And he said, you know, Mom, the reality is she's responsible for her actions, and you're responsible for your reactions.
Yeah.
And I just, it was, talk about an aha moment in dealing with teenagers. It really, truly was. And after that, I just decided I wasn't buying a ticket to the dance.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, really, and now here's the other reality with parenting, is that we really believe, like I said earlier, that it is our job to change our child. It is not. Your child has been entrusted to you for your guidance, for your teaching, for your protection, for your love and your support. So that means that what your goal is to look at the entire process from zip through college and say, how can I best prepare you to be successful out in the world? And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you experience the things that are not so pleasant as long as I'm standing right beside you, loving you, supporting you, teaching you, and guiding you. I'm not going to protect you from it because the world won't protect you from it, my darling. So if you, and this is a story I tell all the time, is, you know, I told my sons, we lived in a really tiny town up in Northern California, and everybody would play in the neighborhood, everybody would play in the street, but there was a park down at the corner, and the rule was from all the parents, you play baseball at the park, you don't play baseball in the street because somebody's going to have a wild pitch, and that baseball is going to go through somebody's window. Well, lo and behold, whose child do you think decides not to listen? Not only does the baseball go through the window, but it goes through the window of the most, excuse me, one of the most well-known vintners in the area, our next-door neighbor. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. So now the question is, what do I do? Now, I could punish my child. I could yell at my child. I decided to turn this into a very clear learning opportunity. I went outside and I said, wow, all I can say is wow right now. Give me 5 minutes. So that puts the pressure of the situation back in his hands, and it stops us from arguing. I walk out and say, okay, buddy, we need to go next door. Where do you want me to stand while you ring the doorbell? Do you want me to stand beside you or behind you? And what are you going to say to him? Oh, and so we had to have that negotiation. And then I said, and how will you pay for this? And he said, I don't have any money. How can I pay for this? I said, well, you know, we'll talk about that, but you need to let him know that you will be paying for this. So then the learning went on to say, I understand you have no money, so Daddy and I will pay for this and have it fixed, and you will pay for 50%. I don't have any money. I said, well, here are two choices. You can either get a paper route to pay for it, or you can do added chores around the house, and we'll assign the amount of money we would pay somebody to, and you can earn that money. And this went on for months, and he didn't want to do it, but the learning was incredible. So the learning continued to, how do I do something I don't want to do? Do I argue? Do I cooperate? What happens if I don't do it? I mean, the learning was enormous. So, you know, that.
I love that. I really do. And my favorite is, where would you like me to stand when you ring the doorbell?
Well, and that worked really well for that situation, but it also worked really well in another situation. My other child was very, very shy, very, very, very shy. And so he wouldn't approach other people, wouldn't approach teachers. And it got to a place where I could use the same technique and say, you know, yeah, you have to do it, but where would you like me to stand to support you? Shall I put my hands on your shoulder? Should I stand beside you? You tell me what feels best. And that gave him the support he needed, as well as knowing he still had to do it. So these are the types of, you know, this, all these tips are in my book, Stop Reacting and Start Responding, on the website, because I wanted parents to know that there are tips and hints that will make you, that will allow you to raise your kids, not just correct behavior, and will allow you to stop reacting and start responding. And it's not a theoretical book, because who in the world has time to sit down and read theory after theory? You want an idea, a hint, a tip, so you can go back to your life. That's what the book is about.
Well, and, you know, I'm going to ask you then, you know, oh, just really quick, for those of you just tuning in, we're here on Word of Mom Radio. We're talking with Sharon Silver about proactive parenting tips. And I just want to take a moment, say thank you to one of our sponsors today, Leslie Dosell and Order Out of Chaos. You can visit her at orderoochaos.com. Take a look at her fabulous academic planner. It's the ways to keep your child on track, on time, and on task. It's just been granted a patent. I mean, it's absolutely fabulous. And it's a great way to help your child visualize their day, not just their school day, but their entire day, to be able to manage their time and to track it. So again, go to Order Out of Chaos, orderoochaos.com, and take a look at the academic planner. We're here back on Word of Mom Radio with Sharon Silver, and I wanted to ask you, are there any kind of tips or cues you can give parents to help in that parenting that is going to raise a child's self-esteem as you are teaching them the rules?
Yeah, there really is. You know, I think that one of the things about self-esteem is that we're in a society right now where everybody praises children 24 hours a day, you know, good boy, way to go, great job. And there was a book, the name of it just ran right out of my head. I'll get back to it in a second. But there was a book that came out a couple years ago where they really dispelled the myth of constant praising. And the idea that they floated, which I really believe in and I've seen it work, is is the idea of when you praise a child and you use that constant praise, that's called global praise. It praises children for everything they do. But nobody's ever really looked at what is the impact that it has on children. Do they actually believe that praise? Well, in the very beginning, yes, they do. But after that, they don't know how to replicate what it is that they have done in their life to receive that praise. And so what you really want to do is, in order to really raise self-esteem, you want to go for specific praise. You want to pick out the details so a child can go, yes, I did do that, and yes, I can do that again. So instead of saying, you know, you really are the very best baseball player that I have ever seen in my entire life, known to man, what you really want to do, or that constant, attaboy, way to go, is to say, you know what, your team lost. And that's a drag. I noticed that today you were able to make it from first to second about 2 seconds faster because of all the practicing you did. Way to go. So the child goes, oh, practicing is actually the way to go. And they can replicate that.
I like that.
So that, and I yeah, so that, you. Yeah. So that tells a child, you know, in math, you got a better math score this week because we helped you this week, whatever it is. So you don't have to praise 24/7. You don't have to be a praise robot, but call your child's attention to the things that they do well so they know how to access them. That fits into the teaching model of how I teach you today will benefit you when you're not around me tomorrow.
I really like that, and I think that it reinforces for a kid so much more than just everything being fabulous all the time. You know, in shifting gears and dealing with younger kids, I watch my friends with their kids and the food arguments that can go on. I was blessed. I had kids who ate everything. I have friends whose kids only eat beige food. I mean, do you know how hard it is to find beige food?
Yeah.
They won't eat anything that has any kind of color. It has to be beige or whatever. You know, so how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the food arguments? And you know, you're chuckling.
I am, because, I work in preschools and all kinds of places, and I have heard this before. And I have also had one child who ate everything and one child who ate basically nothing. And before I forget, the name of the book was Nurture Shock, and that was Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman, and they were the ones that uncovered that research, and I just think it's brilliant. But back to the food. You know, food is a major trigger for both parent and child. It just is. And there's a lot of reasons for it. There are only four things that a child really is in charge of in their life. If you really strip back the covers here and you look at it, a child is really only in charge of how much they eat, if they fall asleep, if they pee or poo, and how fast they walk. So those are the places where there is a fight about having some kind of autonomy and some kind of power in the situation. So if you, children, their stomach is the size of their fist. This was just overwhelmingly enlightening to me. When I realized that, I thought, what am I making such a fuss about? Of course you've eaten enough that's the size of your fist. But look at your child's fist and realize that's the size of their stomach. So we talk a lot about overeating in this country. They are not to eat the same amount that an adult does. The second thing that's really important is children are natural grazers. They are not three meals a day type of people. It is convenient in our society to give them three meals a day. But children need to eat many different things all day long. And if you ask a nutritionist, they'll say, please balance, look at the balance of your children's nutrition over a period of a week, not over a day. One day they'll eat all fruit. One day they'll eat some veggies. One day they'll eat proteins. That's okay. You know, we of course would like them to balance it during the day, but I think that if, you know, you could gather it over the week, then that evidence is also a little helpful. So let's go back to the moment and let's talk about how do you stop that argument? How do you get them past the beige food, which I have to tell you, Dori, I'm going to use that now because I really love that. the idea here is to take the argument out of the equation. So you can have a rule in your house that says, in our house, every human being takes two thank you bites. At every meal, you take two bites, and that is a personal thank you to the person who cooked the meal, which would be me. Now, if you don't like it, you don't have to eat any more. If you do like it, feel free to eat any more. But you do have to have two thank you bites. That will increase the exposure to food for your children. It becomes something respectful. And the other thing is your children have so, I know everybody's heard this, but I want to remind you again, your children have many, 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 many more taste buds than you do. The older we get, the less taste buds we have, the more palatable broccoli is. To a young child, broccoli is really awful to a lot of kids. So you want to take the argument out of it. You want to expose them to it by saying, please take two thank you bites, and then give them something balanced. A lot of times what I suggest to parents is, you know, kids are hungry before dinner, so put out a tea for them. Give them their vegetables and a dip and let them have a snack there. The other thing that worked really well for a lot of families is what I call dip sauces. And when we went grocery shopping, I would allow my children to choose one dressing or sauce that they wanted to try on their food. Now, I found it to be disgusting, but when my younger child put barbecue sauce on everything, it increased his ability to eat everything. I thought it was disgusting, but he loved it. So, you know, what can I tell you?
You know, I'm laughing because I used to do that stuff all the time. I would make my own barbecue sauces. I loved finger foods for the kids. We would have a carpet picnic once a week on a nasty night, and we'd get something educational to watch, and I'd make all kinds of finger foods. But I always had fresh fruits and veggies on the table. I mean, my kids ate Brussels sprouts when they were babies. Because to them, they were, it was like, it looked
them.
Like a brain. You know, so they, to them, it was like, it's a brain. We're eating brain food, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, so it was always just really funny to me because, again, you know, when I would go to, my girlfriend used to love to watch my daughter because her boyfriend was the one with the kid with the beige food. And that's all he would eat. So she'd have my daughter with her once in a blue moon. And she's like, I made stuffed clams. I made stuffed artichokes. My daughter was three. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. See, I still won't eat Brussels sprouts. You know, it was that. It's funny you say Brussels sprouts because I won't eat them. But my son took me to a restaurant and he said, "Mom, eat the Brussels sprout chips. You'll never be the same." And he was right. And I'm like, "Oh my God, these are fabulous."
Well, you know what? Your taste buds change. Let's face it. I mean, I didn't like asparagus as a kid, but it would always frustrate me when I didn't like something. So I would always try it again. Every once in a while, I try it again. I try it again. I try it again. And I found in my 30s, I wound up liking them smothered in oil and vinegar. Now I can eat them, you know, steamed a minute where they're still crisp, you know. So, but it's the food argument is always the funniest thing to me to watch.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I like your two, you know, your two, the thank you taste. We had the two taste, I had a two taste rule for anything new that I made. Because it was like, you know what, the first taste, it's a new consistency, it's a new flavor, whatever. The second taste, if you don't like it, you don't have to eat it, you know. But, I mean, I have to laugh. I think back to my friend Kelly, who took my son Dan, my oldest, to a buffet. He was like two. And they kids eat free. She was like, it was embarrassing. I felt like I should go up and pay for him because my kids ate like adults. I mean, my girlfriend used to laugh, but she's like, you have to put your kids in a food budget. I mean, at 3 years old, they would eat an entire chicken breast and vegetables and their, it was crazy. And they were all like these tall, thin, thank God, built like their father. You know, my daughter asked me once, she goes, so does cheddar cheese and Triscuits make you tall? I'm like, I don't know, you're 5'11". I would have to say yes. You know, that was like my favorite snack. What can I say? You know, but
absolutely,
it's amazing because I watch parents. You know, I think that the food issue is one of the biggest struggles parents have.
Yeah.
And then there are those kids like my godson who ate everything as a kid until the day he realized when he said no, it would aggravate his parents. And now here he is 19. And I said to him one time, I said, so what made you stop eating stuff? He was like, it pissed off my parents.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, you know,
and I
children,
looked at him
I...
And I said, but I said to him, I said, you know, the sad thing is, you convinced yourself now as an adult that you don't like lobster and you don't like shrimp and you don't like all of these amazing foods that you used to love because it ticked off your parents. Now who's losing? You.
Absolutely.
You know?
There's something that I have nailed, and I call it parent pie. And I think this is really, really important. I know. I try and keep people awake when I'm teaching and keep them entertained. But really and truly, it's called parent pie. And the idea is that your children are very interested. They have an authentic need for attention. And, of course, it's our job to fill our children up. So what happens is that our children recognize, let me put it to you this way, when you have a fight with your children, what does it look like to your child? All of a sudden you stop. You stop what you're doing. You turn your body toward them. You look in their eye. For some strange reason, it's automatic that our finger goes out and we begin to point. But 100% of our attention is focused on the child when they misbehave. That's not lost on our children because they recognize children are energetic creatures. They will feel you before they hear you. So where you place your attention is where they figure, yummy, that was delicious. That was a slice of parent pie. Because they have immature reasoning, they're going to misbehave in order to get your full attention. Because otherwise what's happening is you're saying hi or just a minute, I'm on the phone, and you're not giving them 100% of your attention. So what you have to do is you have to shift where you give them 100% of your attention. Less focus on the misbehavior, more focus on the good stuff. If they need to come to you whenever you're in the middle of something, instead of like, what do parents do? It's automatic whenever you're on the phone. You meet your child's glance as they come into the room, and you go, shh, and you point to the phone. I'm on the phone, okay? So your child goes, mommy, 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 mommy. No, shh, I'm on the phone. If you want to shift this so that your child comes in respectfully and is quiet, you actually wave at them to come near you. And then you begin rubbing their back. You give them physical contact. You fill them up without tension. It gets filled up inside of them, and usually 9 times out of 10, they'll turn around and they'll leave. Because the goal was to come for attention. You just headed off a power struggle. You just headed off being disrespectfully interrupted. You've given them what they needed by being positive and by addressing the true need, and there's no argument there. You know, there's other ways to do it, too. There's great ideas of if you need to interrupt me, you just place your hand on my hand, and I put my hand on top of yours. That lets you know and acknowledge, I heard you, I'll be with you in a moment. For little people, I do a game called Knock on Knee, where they come and they knock on your knee, and then they whisper in your ear and tell you what they need. So there's a lot of different tips and ways that you can fill your children up with attention without having them misbehave. And that's parent pie.
That's awesome. that really is. I love that. It's so funny. When I used to do Mom TV, I would be down in my office, and my son was an adult and at one point had moved back in with me for a few months. And invariably, whenever I was on the air, that's when he would come walking into the office, hey, Mom, and I would just call him over. And it's like, okay, and we're having a cameo by my son right now, so come on, Dan. I said, you know the rules. And he'd come in and be like, hi. It's like, do you need something? Is it important? And he's like, no, I guess I can wait. I'm like, all right, kiss your mom. You know, he's like, give me a kiss and tell me you love me. And I was like, you know, that's it. You're on the air. Come and join me.
That's fun. That is so funny. I didn't know you did Mom TV. So did I. We were on the same station and didn't even know it.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I had done it for a while, and then they were changing formats, so all kinds of stuff happened.
Yeah.
I moved, and I moved upstate, and I was lucky to get an internet connection, let alone trying to get my video camera working. So it just, and it's a shame because I absolutely loved it, but it was so funny. And I always tell parents, you know, because most of the women that I interview, you know, have younger kids that are home. I'm like, please, we love kid cameos. Do not be nervous. Bring your kid right along. You know, Janice Clark, who hosts Social Media Help Not Hype, it was hilarious. The first show she did this year, they had a snow day, so her daughter was home from school. She's 6 now. Now, when Janice first started, little Miss Dorothy was always right there with her, and every once in a while would chime in. But she was there with her that day, and she was literally like finishing Janice's sentences as she was talking about realistic goal setting and stuff. And it was just hilarious. It was like, Miss Dorothy, I have missed you as our co-host, you know, and believe me, she's going to be doing Social Media Help Not Hype for teens or tweens as soon as we can get that kid on the air, you know, because it, you know, let's face it, I think, I don't care how old your kid is, they have an innate radar when you are on that phone.
Yes, and that brings up, you know, that's actually very true. And first of all, if I could hire that tween who has social media experience, I could really use her. That would be great. She'd like to do an internship for me. She's got a job. But the truth is, if you go back to when your child was an infant, did you ever wake up 30 seconds or 10 seconds before they began to cry? That's because there's an invisible cord between parent and child. You are always connected energetically, spiritually to your child before you talk and before you hear. So when your attention shifts somewhere else, the child goes, wait a minute, something's a little different in the room. It's an unconscious thing. But the child's like, hey, Mom, I have a need. I don't know why I have a need. Where are your mom? Where are your mom? And then they walk. So, yeah, that's very true.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's remarkable that no matter how old your children get, you know, I can still just pick up that phone and be like, what's the matter?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? It's like, obviously there's something bothering you. Well, no. And I'm like, are you sure? Well, okay. You know, I have that one kid who's like, it's like pulling teeth. The other one who is her own psychologist. So, you know, she works out her own stuff and then don't tell me about it afterwards. And then the third one who just, you know. And I always encourage my kids to talk to me about everything. Because they never wanted there to be something they couldn't talk to me about. And now they're all adults and they talk to me about everything.
Yeah, I have the same thing. Yeah, and that's, you know, I consider that very successful parenting because, you know, the bottom line is if you can manage it on your own and want to tell me afterwards, dynamite. If you need help during the process, dynamite. But what, you know, I've asked my kids, what's the one thing you want to tell me about the way you were raised? And their bottom line is, we know you are always there come day or night. It doesn't make any difference. But the most amazing thing is that my children can read me better than anybody. Both of them can look at me and say, going on, Mom? And, you know, we live in Northern California, so when we had the big earthquake over the summer, let me tell you that at 4 a.m., all of a sudden the email's going off, the texting's going off, and, yeah, they can get a hold of me anytime going, are you there? Did you feel that? Are you okay? So, yes, we communicate day or night.
Remarkable, isn't it?
You know? It is. But and I'm very blessed. Yeah, I think that's how it should be.
Definitely, I agree. You know, I think it's being
a mom. But, you know, I think there's a caveat there, and that is that really and truly, it's releasing your children to who they really are. So parenting is a job of slowly releasing your children to themselves bit by bit during 18 years. And when you do that, you're actually allowing them to become who they are, and they will trust you, and they will return. It really is not about raising your children to the point where you're controlling them and focused on them and on top of them 100% of the time. That's not something that can happen.
No, it really isn't. You know, we need to take a quick break. For those of you just tuning in, we're here on Word of Mom Radio. I want to say thank you to our other show sponsor today, Fisco Marketing, and Ms. Kemia. So now a little word from her.
Hi, this is Ms. Kemia, mompreneur and proud sponsor of Word of Mom Radio. I'm a marketing strategist and social media manager at Fisco Marketing, spelled P-H-I-S-C-O. Fisco Marketing is a marketing consulting firm, and we facilitate the growth of small businesses through conventional standard marketing techniques merged with today's latest social media tactics. We provide branding, social media management, event, and content marketing for businesses in search of real, practical-based solutions. I'm ready to manifest exponential growth. If you're lost in a digital space, Fisco Marketing will lead you through the social media terrain with a strategy to build engagement and drive results. For more information on our services, please visit FiscoMarketing.com. Here you will find a blog chock full of do-it-yourself information on all things related to marketing, social media, and the business of being an entrepreneur. Revitalize your marketing strategy and remain head over heels in love with your business. Stop by and say hello at FiscoMarketing.com.
And we're back here on Word of Mom Radio, and I love Ms. Kemia. She is actually a homeschooling mom who runs a business from home. Yeah.
Wow.
Give her a tremendous amount of credit for the, you know, what she does. I truly do. Okay, I have to ask you.
Okay.
Because all of our listeners, you know, there's a wide range of ages out there. We've dealt with little kids and everything. How do you deal with the teen tween years of that? You know, I mean, because like I said, I mean, you know, I lived through it. Thank God for tea. You know, I would just sit, drink my tea and, you know, but I'm sure there's a lot more.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's behavior in the teen years.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of women who drink tea, and there's a lot of people who that add something to the tea just to make it through the teen years. I think that really and truly there are two things that I really want parents to know about challenging ages, whether we're talking about tweens and teens or whether we're talking about those lovely 3.5-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds, whatever. The first part of this is that misbehavior is not a bad thing. And when I say that, I know that that is totally counterintuitive to how most parents feel about misbehavior. But the truth is that misbehavior isn't a bad thing. It's a learning thing. So when you shift your mind about misbehavior and you stop classifying your child's behavior as bad, because when you classify it as being bad, you unconsciously lean more toward reacting and punishing. What you need to know is that, especially in the tween and teen years, that yelling, reacting, and punishing is building a huge emotional block between you and your child. And in the early years, what you're doing is you're literally building the foundation of who they're going to be, but almost even equally and more importantly, you're building the foundation of the relationship you're going to have with your child forevermore. So you want to start classifying it as being bad and classify it as a learning thing. And what happens is if you don't, your child throws up what I call the I'm not listening barrier. Now, we've all faced that. You know, the arms are crossed, the eyes are rolled, the look is like, are you kidding me? And then we have to go through that in order to get to, will you please listen to me? So it becomes a real vicious cycle. I really believe that the truth is that children learn how to do something right by doing something wrong. And I'm going to say that again, because doing something wrong is actually how children learn to do something right. And if you can make that your watchword, then all of a sudden your world changes. Everything is really, really different from there. So you want to start thinking of it as educational, and what you're doing is incident management and teaching, not having punitive reactions. So what you want to do is the key is to observe your child's misbehavior and see what is the learning opportunity in this moment, whether it's you have a smart mouth, you're being disrespectful, you're breaking the boundaries, whatever it is. And that's how you shift your mind. Now, for the juicy part. The juicy part is when your children start, because they do know how, God bless them, they do know how, to get under your skin. I tell parents all the time, I didn't realize that because I shared DNA with my children, they had the incredible power to get under my skin and cause me to implode faster than any human being ever has. That is the gift of having children. So when that happens and you want your child to be respectful instead of disrespectful, don't start screaming at them and say, don't you dare say that to me. Stand in your power. Stand in the center of who you are. Take that 3 seconds that we talked about in the very beginning of the show, look them in the eye, and say, try again. And when you do that with all your power, your children go, ugh. You don't need to challenge their disrespect. They have been around you long enough to know that they were truly rude, they were disrespectful, they're not listening, whatever it is. And for women, we tend, whenever we get upset, for our voice to go up an octave. You want to consciously bring your voice down an octave and speak slowly, which is why I say, try again. It works brilliantly, even with adult children. And it's a red flag that sends the silent message. I need you to stop, take a breath, review what you said, and say it again in a way that my ears are willing to hear it. Now, when you give that explanation to a younger child, you don't just with a younger child say, try again. You say, when I say those words, I want you to stop and think, what's a better way to tell mommy in a way her ears can hear this? By the time, if you're doing this at 3, 4, 5, and 6, by the time they're a tween and teen and really trying to give you that disrespectful tone, all you have to ever do is say, try again. It works brilliantly.
I like how each time you say that, your voice does go down, and you have, like, I'm sitting here going, okay.
See? See?
It's awesome. It really is. You know?
Yeah, it has an emotional impact that is hard to deny.
I actually used to just say, excuse me. And they'd just look at them and be like, excuse me? And then all of a sudden they'd be like, okay. And they would rephrase how they spoke to me, and I'd be like, oh, okay. All right, let's talk about this. But yeah, I would just look at them like, excuse me.
Yeah.
But I actually try again.
Well, one has the ability, I've seen it work with some children, where you say, excuse me, and some parents will throw that indignant tone onto it, and now it becomes a power struggle. I'm laying down that opportunity to, like, all right, get the swords out, we're going to challenge it. But when you say, try again, it's like, I'm not investing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you anything. And one of my jobs as an educator is to really use my voice and to show you how it has the effect on you. And every person in my audience will always go, whoa.
Yeah.
And
I'm sitting here. Dude, I did the exact same thing. Inside, I felt myself go, ooh, okay.
It's true. And so that's really how it is. And those are the types of tips that I've put in my book and that I've put in the series that we offer at Proactive Parenting, because parents don't need to know. I mean, if they want to know, all that information is out there about the developmental phases that your child's going to go through and what that's going to impact. And I know it. And, you know, but what parents really want to know is, okay, fabulous. I got a 3.5-year-old. It's the age of belligerence. It's the age of theory of the mind. Fabulous. And how do I get him to do this? How do I get him to do that? It's like, okay. And that's what became very, very apparent to me. And that's when I shifted my practice, which is I wanted to be able to give parents tips and hints on the fly, on the go, and say, here you go, because you want to be the parent you want to be. We all want to be good parents. That's it. That's the bottom line. It's our heart's desire.
And, you know, that's the last thing I'm going to ask you as we wrap up, you know, because as a parent, it is such an emotionally exhausting role. And, you know, the job of mom, it's a lifelong job. And how do you, what do you think are ways that we can recharge and re-energize and regroup for ourselves as parents?
You know, I think that really and truly what I have noticed is that the more that you focus on the types of tips that I am offering, the less emotional energy you're expending. And that's really recently I've been going through a bunch of things, and I've been dealing with a lot of parents that are going through a lot of things, and what I ask them all the time is, how much emotional energy are you expending? And they go, oh, a ton. I said, well, do you notice how exhausted you are? And they're like, yeah, I am really, really exhausted. I said, well, when you stop doing this, when you put the onus back on the child, when you don't engage in that emotional warfare, you're saving your emotional energy. And that's really what all of this is about. You want your child to do the thinking far more than you do the thinking. You know, it's like I tell parents all the time, I've already been through third grade, sweetheart. You do this. I don't need to do this. You do. So it's the emotional baggage that we're really talking about. The other thing is that you have to look at, where are my reactions coming from? T. Barry Brazelton, America's favorite pediatrician, coined the phrase ghosts from the cradle years and years ago. He was my first introduction to parenting, more years than I want to admit to. His whole thing is, you have to look at where your reaction is based. It doesn't just come out of the blue. It's based in something, and it's based in a reaction you had as a child. So when you can deal with your personal baggage and let that go, you have more emotional energy. So a lot of that is included in the book, of asking parents, you know, where in the world does this come from? But one thing I want to make sure that parents know is that with anything that you ever get from Proactive Parenting, we give you a wonderful free ebook called Why is Yelling My Go-To Tool? And in there, it gives you a three-step process of how to deal with reactions and helps you along this process. And I did not want to charge for it. I wanted to give it away with everything because that's the bottom line. That's what you want to do. You want to parent with love and respect and not yelling and arguing because that's really where it's at.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Yelling is, I think that's the most exhausting thing.
Yeah.
You know, because you're having an argument with a child. Hello.
And you're losing.
Of course you're going to lose. You know, I'm serious. I just flashed back. I used to be at Blythedale Children's Hospital, and I will never forget one of our rec directors, one of the kids had taken off, and he's running down the hall, and this guy is screaming at the top of his lungs after him, Frank! Frank! Trying to get this kid to stop. And this kid was deaf.
Oh.
And so I just stepped out and I just looked at him and I signed stop. And he stopped where he was and I turned him around and I was like, he's calling you. You know, and I just looked at him and he was like, yeah. As I was yelling his name louder, I'm thinking to myself, the kid's deaf. Let me yell louder. So he gets deaf. And it just goes to show that even as a grown-up with a PhD, you could be knocking your head against a wall. Because no matter how loud you yelled that kid's name, guess what? He wasn't going to hear you. And it was,
well, the most amazing thing about this is that I have a tremendous amount of therapists and PhDs and doctors who come to me and say, I do this for a living and I'm failing with my child. Why? And I think that the answer I give them is helpful to all parents because you're looking at everything as if it was a problem and you're not looking at it as if it is normal. And misbehavior with children is normal. It is not a problem. It is not just your child that's doing this. That's what parenthood is about, and that's what nobody tells you. This is normal. There are no problems. I mean, yes, we have a lot of problems, okay, but and there's a lot of different issues. But for the most part, misbehavior is normal. It is how children learn. And that's shocking for a lot of people.
And, you know, I think that's a great, a great way to end this conversation. Because, I do, because it is normal.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a child who has never misbehaved, never done anything wrong, guess what? They're probably a doll, okay? They're not alive. They're inanimate. And so that's why they're perfect. And so there you go. You know?
Very funny.
But
I think that that's really true. It is. And I think that that really factors into the emotional output that parents are concerned about and their emotional exhaustion. If you stop trying to focus and change everything to get back to your pre-child daily life, it's never going to be calm again. It's never going to be quiet. You're never going to have the freedom you had. You need to accept reality. Misbehavior, yelling, it's all part of parenting. Once you accept that, you know, you kind of relax and go, all right. I mean, there's that diaper commercial where the first child they put, you know, like all the antibacterial soap on. By the second child, they're like, here, hold him. And she's handing him to a child, to an adult whose hands are covered in grease. It's like acceptance of what parenthood is all about. You can relax.
That's exactly right. It's like, how sharp are those knives you're juggling? Oh, butter? Okay, good enough. You know, it is, you know, because let's face it. They don't hand you a rule book when they hand you that little child. You know, you're on your own.
I wish they'd hand my book out as a rule book because it would help parents tremendously.
I do too. And I really, I encourage you guys, go to proactiveparenting.net. Please go take a look at Sharon's book. My kids are grown and gone, and I can't wait to keep sharing your site because I have friends with kids. I have friends who are going to have grandchildren. My kids are going to have kids. You know, I mean, I love what you are sharing. I get a chance to talk to you before, you know, we were going on here, but I truly, just in going through your site and sharing, you know, getting ready for this show, I just was falling in love. with what you were sharing, and I really am. I think it's absolutely marvelous. So good for you and good for all of the parents that are reaching out to you to learn those proactive parenting tips that you are sharing.
Well, thank you for having me. This was a great ball of fun, and I'm happy to do it any other time.
Oh, good. Please, by all means, come back. You know, we love parenting shows. Two Wednesdays out of the month, we actually have Productive Play, which is geared for your – that's actually this Wednesday coming up. Alyssa and Debbie will be back with Productive Play, and that's for your preschooler to make sure that you are productively playing with them to help them be ready for kindergarten. And the first Wednesday of the month, we have the Sneaky Mom Show because kids learn best when they think they're playing. And Kaz gives great information and tips and ideas on how to engage your older kids in activities and things that are going to help them become lifelong lovers of learning. And I love parenting shows. I love anything. I love talking kids. I really do because the job of mom is my favorite job.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can maybe we can do a question and answer time next time and get some live people here and ask some questions because that's also my favorite thing to do.
That would be great. I actually love doing shows like that. That would be a lot of fun, Sharon. So I will reach out to you and maybe in the spring.
All right.
We could look to do that. I would absolutely love it. So for those of you tuning in, thank you so much for being here. We love that you are sharing time with us on Word of Mom Radio. Sharon, share this out. This archive is up forever, so people can come back and really get to hear, you know, I like that so much of what you do is rooted in your reality of being a mom, because that's the best. Well, it's the best way to learn, and it's the best people to learn from. You know, when you know somebody's already been there, done that, got the T-shirt, spilled some stuff on it, but, you know, it still fits. It's so much easier. Because they can relate to you, and you know that they're coming from a place of authenticity.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are my pleasure. Absolutely loved it. So thanks again. And like I said, everybody tuning in, we will see you here Tuesday for Social Media Help, Not Hype. Until then, this is Dori DiCarlo saying bye for now, and go out and create a marvelous day.